House Labor Committee, April 3rd, hearing room D, 8:30 a.m., tape 86.
We have a quorum. Could call Labor Committee to order. And we're going to start out this morning with a public hearing in House Bill 2775. And we're going to start with Larry Kleinman. Larry, do you want to have anyone with you? You want to do this by yourself?
I don't have anyone else.
That's okay. We appreciate you coming this morning.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Larry Kleinman. I'm the Secretary Treasurer of Northwest Tree Planters and Farm Workers United, also known by our Spanish acronym PCUN or PECUN. We're Oregon's farm worker union. Our membership numbers about 2,900. They include farm workers, nursery workers, tree planters, tree thinners, predominantly people who work and live in the Marion, Polk, and Clackamas County areas, but our membership extends throughout the state. And we've come today to testify against both House Bill 2775 and the following bill on your calendar. They are closely related. I don't know if the chair prefers that we confine our comments only to 2775.
If you would, I'd be fine.
Okay. The bill, as you're aware, changes the requirements for an employer upon discharge of an employee, and it would have particular impact for farm workers that we wanted to draw, some of those impacts we wanted to draw the committee's attention to. As the committee's probably aware, a large number of farm workers in this state work in what's called seasonal labor, that is to say labor that lasts of a short duration. It can last anywhere from a day, a week, a month, and although we believe the majority of the farm labor workforce in the state now resides permanently in the state, there are still a considerable number of what people describe as migrant workers, that is, people who come to this state only for short periods of time to do predominantly fruit and vegetable harvest work. To require or to allow that an employer be able to hold wages and not upon discharge or termination of employment until the end of the pay period, which might be as much as a couple of weeks, works a particular hardship on those farm workers who don't reside in the area.
Excuse me, Larry, do you think the bill requires you to do that?
No, but it definitely allows an employer to do
it. It allows it, but it doesn't require it.
No, it doesn't require it.
If an employer wanted to pay it on the day of termination, he wouldn't be precluded from doing that, I don't believe, from the bill.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. However, it may require the employee to wait at the discretion of the employer.
Okay.
That's our concern about it. And
this
is the hardship that we have come to describe to the committee, the fact that an employee may require those wages immediately to move on to the next site of employment, whether it be in this area or whether it be out of this area. And to expect that an employee, especially when we may be talking about relatively small sums of money, to stick around for 2 weeks in order to receive that pay, and also where you have a situation that employers may not have a reliable place to send or an address to which to send the money onward or back to wherever this individual came from,
Mr. Chair,
we think works a hardship.
Go ahead.
The people that you're referring to have been doing this for a long, long time. Has there been any problem with the employer paying? I mean, they're pretty much set up to do that. Is there an indication that you have that that may change?
Well, Representative Watt, we have seen considerable problems already in regard to correct and timely payment of wages, especially in the harvest of fruits and vegetables. Last summer, our organizers monitored wage payment in the fields around this area, found that many employers were not complying with the minimum wage laws, were not keeping adequate records, were not making adequate payments. We believe that this only exacerbates that problem. It doesn't help to solve it. Some time ago, before the changes in the immigration law, it was, you could say, the prevailing practice to simply pay cash each day without any record-keeping, paperwork, deductions, and so on. That's no longer the prevailing practice in this area, predominantly as a result of the immigration law that now requires employers to document hires.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Would there be some sort of exemption that we could come up with to deal with what I'll call the traveling worker? Because I do see that as potentially a special case. We have this balancing here where the employers are saying, well, gee, you know, I'm set up on computer to send out a paycheck every Friday, and so-and-so leaves on Wednesday, and I suddenly have to pay so-and-so. And I can understand that argument. Your counter is, I've got people who are moving around all over the place, and they need to be taken care of when they have to leave. Is there a way we could say that, can you think of some sort of exemption we could put in to say, well, you don't wait until the next payday when you've got an employee who doesn't have a fixed address near the place of employment, or if you have a movable place of employment? Maybe that would be the kind of exemption. See what I mean? So a fast food restaurant who's got an 18-year-old who just ups and quits one day doesn't have to have the manager go through trying to figure out pay. On the other hand, you know, because the 18-year-old lives five blocks away and they can mail him his check at the end of the week or whenever. But you've got the person out there in the field who maybe lives 150 miles away if they have a place at all. Do you think that the movable place of employment might be the kind of exemption that would meet your needs?
Well, Representative Mannix, I'm not sure I agree with the premise of this bill at all. In other words, it has not been demonstrated, certainly to my satisfaction, that this is a serious problem that employers are facing. So I can't say that unless I would say that the burden for our organization would be on employers to first demonstrate that this is a serious problem that requires this kind of across-the-board change, to which then an exemption can be interposed. I would also point out that in terms of your example, that existing law contemplates that where an employee quits, where an employee initiates the termination of employment, the employer already has 48 hours. So the idea of an employer being surprised and therefore inconvenienced by termination of employment because it's being initiated on the employee's part is already provided for in the law. And that, I believe, even excludes weekends and holidays. So that could be a considerably longer period of time. So I think this is basically a bad idea. It's an unnecessary idea, unnecessary change, and it works those particular hardships. So I think before you look to make particular exemptions to deal with other effects or particular effects of this bill, that you consider whether this is even proper and to begin with.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's the sum of my testimony. Any other questions?
Any other questions? Okay, Larry, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Howard Hunt?
No? Howard Hunt.
Looks like Howard Hunt. I can't quite read it.
Silver Investments.
Local 9?
I get my name.
Okay. We've got yours on here, too, so you're welcome to come up.
Thanks.
How are you?
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of coming here to testify on this.
We appreciate you doing it.
House Bill 2775.
Mr. Chair, can we get you to give your name?
My name is Howard Hurst. And I'm a business representative for the Hotel Restaurant Employees Local 9 in Portland. However, our local is a statewide local, and we have approximately 2,500 members of our local, spread out from Portland down through the coast and into eastern Oregon. Due to the fact that more and more people are employed in the service industry and other industries that are low pay, which pays mostly minimum hourly wages, this legislation would be devastating. Employees in low-paying jobs live from day to day, and not receiving their paycheck upon termination would mean a difference between being able to eat or go hungry. Furthermore, if the paycheck upon termination is not available, these employees will find themselves in a position to go on a state subsidy prior to ever having the money to seek new employment. Any benefit the employer would gain from this legislation would be far offset by the detrimental impact that it would have on the low-wage earners. The hotel employees and restaurant employees, Union Local 9 urges you to vote against this bill.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Irv Fletcher, Oregon, AFL-CIO. I provided you with a short statement, which I won't read because you can, but simply put, we would probably operate from the same assumptions that Larry Kleinman would. You first have to present us with some sort of a problem. As the former Governor Victor Tier used to say, if it ain't fixed, if it ain't broke, why do you want to fix it? So first we need to know what's broke. Show us what's broke, and then we can negotiate on how to fix it.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank both of you for testifying.
Thank you.
John McCullough?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCullough, representing the Oregon Fairs Association, here to speak in support of the two bills that you're hearing this morning. And I guess I'm speaking more in favor of the concepts embodied in both 2775 and 2979. I'm expecting a person from the Jefferson County Fair in Madras who wanted to testify as well, and I signed him up, but he's on his way from Madras right now, and so I expect him to arrive before too long. But I just wanted to explain, I guess, the unique circumstances that the county fairs face in dealing with this issue. I've given you, hopefully you have a copy of my written remarks, but this lists the closing day and time of each of the county fairs in the state. What the county fairs have run into in a majority of cases is the fact that their payrolls are done by the county. The county offices who do payroll for the entire county also does payroll for the county fair. When the fair ends in the evening on a weekend, the county offices are not open. The counties are not having their employees go in and run the payroll, and as a result, the fairs find it physically impossible to provide the paycheck at that time. Now, some of the larger fairs are able to do it because they do their own payroll in-house.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Are you saying this is the time that the fair ends or the working day ends?
Mr. Chair, Representative Domini, this is the final day, which would be the termination time for most of those employees employed.
Not the time of the employees, because I think most employers in this state do not terminate people on the spot. They say, come back in tomorrow and we'll talk about it. So they actually do the termination on a following morning. So that's why I asked the question about why, is this the time the fair ends so that you wouldn't know how to calculate the last hours? Or does a fair, do you do something different than most employers? Most of the employers that I've been around, if somebody gets into trouble at 10 o'clock at night and they decide they're going to fire them, they say, come in the morning and we're going to talk about this. And then they make their decision where they're going to terminate them. They don't terminate them at midnight.
Mr. Chair, Representative Domini, my understanding is that when the fair ends, well, as one fair explains to me, when they hire someone to work at the fair, they are also terminated at the same time at the point when the fair ends at that time. There may be differences in hours that are accumulated during that 4 or 5 day period of the fair, but the actual termination is as of the end of the fair.
So you're saying in the example of Baker, the fair actually ends on Friday at 7 p.m. and they don't run through the weekend?
That's correct, Mr. Chair, Representative Domini. And what this has resulted, as I said, is that it's virtually impossible for the many of the fairs to get that information to the county clerks or have the county clerks run that payroll during the weekend. Most fairs, when the fair ends on a weekend, will submit the hours for each employee on Monday, and then the processing of the checks begins. We've had an additional problem that I think Mr. Bauer was going to testify to, in that When an employee is late in turning in a time card, that then requires, at least in his county, the county clerk to run a special employee, or a special payroll, in this case, for the one employee. The fares have been getting by. Some of them have not, quite frankly, been able to comply with the existing law because of the physical relationship and getting the hours worked to the county clerks on the weekday when the fare actually ends on a weekend. The other option that we see available is to try to estimate the number of hours that an employee is going to work, so the payroll could be run on Friday afternoon for the fare employees who are terminated over the weekend. That raises issues as to underestimating the hours worked, underestimating overtime, and creating, as we see it, additional problems. So what we're coming to you with, our bill 2979 or 2775, which would accomplish a similar purpose, is to try to add some flexibility for at least the industry I represent in paying these employees as practicable as possible. We think that there are safeguards, at least in our industry, and I'm not sure about others, but at least in the fare industry, we think that people who are taking advantage of what the opportunities fares have to offer for making money, either through the concessions they have or vending goods and services, if we have a knowledge that they are not paying their employees, we send that information on a network that includes all of the Western United States and all of the United States through the International Association of Fares and Expositions, letting them know that this certain employer has violated wage laws. And we think that employers do not want to risk losing this lucrative business opportunity by not paying their employees. So we think we can build safeguards in to our system to prevent abuses. And what we're seeking as we come before you is, I guess, a window to allow us to be able to process our payroll. I might add that after drafting our bill, 2979, I have been told that 72 hours would be better for us to meet the time requirements than the 48 hours that we actually have in our bill, and I would offer that as a proposed amendment if you decide to move on the bills.
Representative Watt.
When I think of a county fair, I think of a multitude of employees. Now, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong here, we're talking about the employees that work in the fair concessions that are picking up the litter around the fair. We're not talking about the people who actually work for the carnival part of the fair. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Watt, no, we're talking, as both bills are written, they would apply to every employer. So the carnival, for example, the carnival at the Oregon State Fair is an Oregon employer operating out of Oaks Park in Portland, Oregon. When the state fair ends on Labor Day at 10 p.m. at night, they tear down that carnival to head up to the fair in Puyallup in Washington State, which opens in 4 days. They have 600 employees during the time of the fair. They do their payroll out of a central location and take all of the time records from Salem to their central processing place for their payrolls and run that payroll. And it's my understanding that they start the payroll on Tuesday morning, and the checks are on their way by Thursday. I understand that doesn't comply with what the requirements of the law are now, but the fact is that they physically are not able to process that payroll. But it's a short answer to your question, yes, it applies to all employers.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Let's assume for a moment that some some of the testimony might be convincing that some particular industry in some particular circumstances needs a break. And I'm just, let's assume that for the moment. Let's not say that's going to happen. Wouldn't we be better off just having a very specific provision that's directed to a particular industry that has a particular problem, rather than change social policy broadly with all the unpredictable effects that it might have? I mean, couldn't we say for county fairs or for the state fair, if they close on a weekend, that they're given an extension of time in order to prepare their payroll or something like that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, of course, that meets our needs, and I would support that. There are others who would argue that they should have similar opportunities, but
well, what I'm clearly getting at is maybe there's 10 different operations in this state that might have a good justification. We do this all the time. If some industry makes a good argument for an exemption from standard policy, we put it into the law as a very narrow exemption, but we don't rewrite the whole policy, the tail wagging the dog, so to speak.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, if that was the direction given me by the committee, we could draft an amendment that would do that.
You might keep that in mind.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I just want to follow up on, I think probably the carnival people are probably the best example of why we need this kind of law, from my perspective. Because from my perspective, if there is a problem with the check, and now that carnival is set up in New York, how does that affected employee ever collect lost wages? That's why the law was drafted the way it was. And I think, if anything, maybe we should find a way of enforcing that part of it. But I want you to address, don't you see that as being the reason the law was drafted in the first place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominey, I think that has been a problem of transient employers. And that, just my understanding, is probably why it was done. I can tell you right now that the carnivals operating in this state are either domiciled and headquartered in Portland, Vancouver, and we have one carnival, small one in Salem, and one operating in Northern California, who have been in business for many, 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 many years and are completely accessible, as far as I know, in the states they operate in the West. There aren't too many carnivals that are shipping all of their equipment to eastern parts of the United States once they have played an engagement in Oregon.
Well, Mr. Chair, isn't Davis, aren't they out of Washington?
Davis Amusements is headquartered in Clackamas, Oregon.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
In your scenario with this weekend termination thing, the bill that you're testifying on now, 2775, is the one that continues the due date until the next regular payday. You've got a bill following that has a little bit different clause. It occurs to me that your problem would be cured by changing the requirement to, say, the end of the next business day or the second business day following termination or something like that, so that we could address your concern about having access during business hours to the computers and all that stuff, the mail or whatever. What do you really need? I mean, you don't need the next payday per se, do you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, from what I've been told by fairs who have approached me on this issue is that they feel that by the time they get their information to the county at the start of a business day, they need 72 hours to completely get that payroll done. We offered in our bill initially a 48-hour period. I guess what I'm saying is that we need some period of time during the weekday to accomplish the physical writing of those checks.
Well, would you be more comfortable phrasing this whole thing, whatever we decide on, in terms of working days as opposed to hours? Because I mean, the way you've got it written now, even in your bill, within 48 hours of the date of termination, excluding Saturdays and Sundays, so that would start at 12:01 a.m. on Monday morning, 48 hours starts. Would it make more sense to have this phrased in current business days?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, it would. I think what legislative counsel was trying to do was mirror the existing language in the statute that refers to 48 hours. But we would have no objection to putting it in terms of working days.
Yeah, well, working day language exists in other places in the statutes. I think of, for example, a bank's obligation to process a check is phrased in terms of working days. And, that's fine. Thanks.
Any other questions?
John.
Representative Repine.
Thank you. What's the recourse today in the government or employment termination that if somebody is not satisfied on their check on a specific time that they're supposed to be given, what is their recourse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Repine, I think the Bureau of Labor and Industries, who I think is going to testify in these bills, can probably answer the penalty question. We know that I would rather defer to them who actually know what the penalties are, because I know that they have been assessed.
Okay.
But you're telling me in regards to the your scenario of the carnival businesses, they today do not comply with the law.
Mr. Chair, Representative Repine, some of them do not. That's correct.
Thank you for your confession.
Thank you.
John, I guess Floyd hasn't gotten here yet, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Marilyn?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Marilyn Coffle from the Bureau of Labor and Industries. This bill would significantly change the state's policy on how final paychecks are handled. Section 1 of the bill deletes the requirement that employees who are discharged, in other words, fired without notice, or who are terminated by mutual agreement with at least 48 hours notice, are to be paid immediately. And it also deletes the requirement that employees are to be paid within 48 hours when they quit without notice. They also tie the penalty provisions for failure to make prompt wage payments to the next regular payday. This bill replaces the current scheme with a requirement that employees are to be paid no later than the next regular payday. Their proposal doesn't distinguish between firings or terminations by mutual agreement or a quit without notice. This is a major policy departure. My concern is the employees that are impacted the most by this proposal are the ones that are least able to afford it. They're the low-wage income earners who, because of their inability to accumulate any kind of savings, credit, or other assets, basically live from paycheck to paycheck. And as long as these folks are employed, such creditors such as landlords are willing to extend their due date on rent, or other creditors such as utilities are willing to let a payment ride and loans to keep food on the table are possible. But when these employees are no longer working or are looking for work, the environment changes. They're less likely to take these same kind of risks on a person that's unemployed. The major groups that this bill would impact are the homeless, who live from day to day on what they find for work, migrant laborers who depend on prompt payment to get from one farm, one orchard, one location to another, and the young, unskilled, and low-income workers. It means the difference for some of these people between eating on a daily basis, a roof over their heads, how far they can travel, or if they can even travel to their next job. We've been involved in these issues for a long time. Because the law is strong, the division and employees generally have been successful in convincing employers that prompt payment of wages is in everyone's interests. For example, employees are not required to wait for their wages, and employers wrap up their employment agreement with the employee, enabling the employer to move on with their business with no loose ends. Some employers have objected to the inconvenience of the law. They argue they cannot meet the statutory timelines because of sophisticated computer systems, off-site payroll departments, or internal systems designed to accommodate corporate needs. These are the same arguments that the state of Oregon, as an employer, made in a court case that involved a Department of Justice employee who had not received her prompt payment and in full. The state lost that argument in the Court of Appeals in 1982. To my knowledge, the state of Oregon employs several thousand employees throughout the state and pays those employees through a central pay unit in Salem, and it complies with the statute as it is now written.
Can I ask a question? Please. That state of Oregon case, actually what that meant was then, in effect, that's a policy decision that should have been made by the legislature, and the state had no right to vary from the policy. Just to clarify the point about the court decision.
Yes.
The arguments presented to the court were arguments that related to the merits of the policy, and the court simply said, sorry, those arguments don't make any difference. You didn't follow the law. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't consider those arguments maybe in looking at the policy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's correct.
Go ahead. Thank you.
And we don't think that an inconvenience to the employer should stand against the needs of employees to feed themselves and their families, to be able to move freely without artificial barriers, and to be able to meet financial commitments to creditors. This is recognized in the current law.